Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we have a fun topic. We're going to talk about gadgets. So, Rochelle, I was happy to see this topic because I love gadgets. Even as like a kid, like gadgets were, even just the word gadget is awesome. Like you think about gadget, like it's like, oh, gadget, that means it's going to be a fun technology that's maybe not quite a toy, but probably, I don't know. I get the same feeling from gadgets that I do from like toys or Legos. It's like, it's something cool that's going to be maybe a little bit useful.
Yeah, I'm the same way. When I think I told you this, I'm having a yard sale soon, and I'm going to have a technology yard sale by itself because I have, you remember the bricks for the printers? Remember that big old giant brick you had to use to plug a printer in?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Like the size of two bricks put together. I'm like, I need to get rid of this stuff. I don't know what I'm keeping it for. It's not like it's going to come back around.
You know, like I've got a like box full of all those things that my wife wants me to throw away, like. It comes up very often and I'm like, I don't know, I might need that little brick sometime. Like, you know, like what if we get a new printer that uses one of those and we, you know, it's going to be a real pain to find an extra one.
I will tell you, one of my friends told me this the other day. He says, how can you tell if you're a hoarder? So if you are saving it for your children to go through, that's an indication you're a hoarder. Or if you're thinking I'm going to need it someday, you're a hoarder. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, you know, it's true. And like, I don't feel like a hoarder, but I definitely hoard up some cables. Like it is awful when you want to get like if you just need an HDMI cable and like you need it right now, like I don't want to have to go like to a store. You're going to get a bad price. Like if you just have one laying around, it's great. You can always use extra HDMI cables.
But one is one thing, is 10 is a whole nother. And I think I have like 10 of all different sorts, like HDMI to USB-C, HDMI, no, to HDMI. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It is. But so I'm looking forward to these gadget topics. And one we were talking about shortly before we started recording, and I'd like to jump to that one first, because I think that makes for an interesting conversation, is smart light bulbs. Because I think that's one that like we've all... I mean, I guess there's varying levels of smart light bulbs, but we were talking before the show started where, you know, you used to have a light bulb, which was, is the term phosphorescent? Like it had some chemicals and some metal in there that when electricity hits it, it pops on and lights up the room. And like, you know, that was the light bulb for 100 years, over 100 years, I guess. And then we got those LED light bulbs, which I think that's what most of ours are now, are just, I'm not even really sure what the technology is behind LED, but they are much more cost efficient or much more battery energy efficient. So an LED light can provide the same level of light for a longer period of time using less energy. And then we also have like true smart light bulbs, which are a light bulb that you can hook up to your cell phone, which are also very cool. And I don't think we have any of those in our house, but it's been one that I've been very curious about, almost because when I first heard about smart light bulbs, it almost sounded like a joke, right? Like how can a light bulb be smart? But actually it's sort of nice to be able to turn your lights on and off with your phone. So
well, do you remember when you could turn your lights on and off with the clapper? You're probably too young to remember the clapper.
Yeah. We used it for our Christmas tree for a while here, even in the last decade or so.
Oh, okay. But I mean, like, you know, you see an evolution, you see it coming. You just didn't expect it to come how it came, right? So for the sake of our listeners, we use these acronyms all the time. So what does LED stand for, Drew? Drew?
That's a good question. I think I'm gonna say light emitting device. Is that correct? I'm gonna look it up as we're talking.
Diode, light emitting diode.
Oh, all right.
but what's really interesting about that is like we people who work in technology take these things for granted, right? We're not shocked by it. You know, when something new comes along, we're not, oh my God. You know, maybe Google Glass, we were kind of, oh my God. Maybe for a moment there, that was like, oh my God, that was a pretty big thing. But other iterations of devices, like where we've gone with the laptop, where we've gone with computers as a whole, we're not shocked by that. But I think, you know, something like these Internet of Things devices, IoTs, these LED things that are coming online, I think that that gives us a moment of pause, right? Because right now, if you were to go in the store, send an ordinary person into the store to buy a light bulb, he or she wouldn't make a difference between an LED light versus a fluorescent light, or, you know, they wouldn't, because they would just want a light bulb. They want a 60 watt light bulb. They go, the store has it, and they buy it. Yep. But within that, you know, you open it up and you see there's a little slot at the bottom of the light bulb for you to charge the light bulb. So, brilliant idea, I think, you know, for the light bulb. But the question is, what does it do to the manufacturer? So this is the question where I ask you this, Drew, where we talk about this a lot. Whenever something is free, you are the product, right? It's you that they're buying. So with LED light bulbs and smart light bulbs as a whole, won't they press themselves out of the market? Because once somebody gets one, all you need to do is stick it to your charge and it'll last 1,000 years. Why do I need to go buy another one? So run out and turn your whole home into an LED home light. Oh, yeah. You know, what is the impact of that to manufacturers of light bulbs?
So at least in my experience, and this does not seem science-based, but more experience-based, is that the LED lights don't really seem to last much longer than a real fluorescent light bulb. Like, even though I know the science says that it does, and that's why they're a little bit more expensive, but I still feel like we change our LED light bulbs way more frequently than I would like to. Like, it's probably not as often as normal old school light bulbs, but it's not never. And I think they still make a fair amount of money off of them. But saying that, like, I don't know when the last time I changed the light bulb in here was. And I mean, it's at least been a few years. So that's a pretty good time span for any sort of light bulb. So that's, maybe they are getting better and better. Like when they first came out, I remember it was sort of a change, because these LED, with an old school light bulb, you turn it off, you flip your light switch, and immediately your light bulb is going at full power. The room lights up. It's like almost like speed of light, right? Click on, click off. With the LEDs, they take a little bit to sort of warm up, or at least they did when they first came out. And so you didn't get that sort of instant gratification of a full room of light. And I think that sort of put a lot of people off of it. And that's why people started sort of hoarding those old light bulbs, is that even though they're less efficient, people like that instant on. And at least for me, like now, I don't even notice sort of the warm up speed that these bulbs take, if there even is one. Like maybe they just got rid of it, or I don't
negligible. You know, it's not that, you know, you notice it, but it's not, you know, by the time your eye and your brain connect to it, the light is lit, you know, so there's that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that these, it just brings up so many other issues. And I know we have other gadgets to get to, but you know, when you think about the digital refrigerator, the digital stove, you know, like, where are we going with this? I mean, like, so again, Internet of Things. So when you have these devices that don't plug into anything else, not connected to a computer or not connected to a hard drive or something, it's going back to the manufacturer and what they're collecting about you. So the refrigerator has sensors throughout it, right? So if you have an egg tray, it knows when the egg tray is low. So like, I don't know, I guess weight or something. And, you know, and I realize this is far from light bulbs, but the point is where are all these digital technology? So sooner or later, we'll have to plug ourselves in. You know, we have to go to a port and plug ourselves in to keep functioning, to keep living. I mean, I would not be surprised by that, you know, that we get to the place, like, I know they're implanting cameras in people to, you know, track their health, especially the very rich, you know, they have all these things that send all these sensors about their health. But what is going to stop us from thinking about technology in such a way that we consider ourselves, you know, digitally, you know, get corrected vision, right? Get your teeth, everything done digitally, as opposed to, you know, going to the dentist, going to the eye doctor, whatever. That's not too far-fetched, is it?
No. And I'm very much looking forward to that. I mean, they've got a lot of the, like, thinking about, oh, you gave me a look like you're not looking forward to that.
you, they're going to disconnect you one day. You know, when you're not looking, you know, say, oh, well, you don't need to be here anymore. We're going to disconnect you from your USB connect.
Well, listen, I don't want to be disconnected from my USB, but I also don't want to go to the dentist twice a year.
Like, I don't want to go any time of year, but yeah. Still, Drew, I mean, like, isn't it a little bit scary to you?
You know, it is, but it's not world-ending scary to me. Like, I think about, I mean, how long have they been putting, like, titanium hip replacements in for, you know, 50 years? Maybe, I have no idea on the history.
A little bit longer than that, but it's been around for a long time. Hips, arms, legs, you know, what you remember the Bionic Man?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's
so
like,
there you go.
It's sort of cool. Like, I've got a tooth implant, and that thing works great. It's really weird, like having a piece of titanium go through your gums into your jaw, especially when the dentist like uses that water pick on it and it like shakes the inside of your soul. But I'm happy to have it instead of having like a gap in my teeth. So I will take that. You know, pacemakers, how long have pacemakers been around?
Oh my God, forever. I mean, at least the early 70s, because remember we heard about it. I can't remember what it is, but they had transplanted some kind of animal organ into a human, and that had failed. And shortly after that, you had the pacemaker, you know? And I mean, it was trial and error because pacemakers killed people too, but, you know, they finally figured it out to now.
Yeah.
As long as there's blood flowing, it will give you an artificial heartbeat.
Yeah. And that's sort of like, that's amazing. That's like, you know, something beating, I guess it's not technically beating your heart, but occasionally, like, you know, beating your heart. It's got to have energy. It's got to have a power source. It sits inside you. Like, you can't really reach. How do they recharge that? I guess you have to, like, take them out, have the batteries replaced every decade
so
or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My birth mother had one. Yep. I think it's, you know, I'm not quite as brave as you are, Drew, because you watch like movies. Like, I'm sure you saw The Boogeyman. I haven't heard any reviews from you, but you're always out there on the cutting edge. I'm frightened, and it might be my age. You know, like, I'm at least 20 years older than you, so it might be my age. You know, so that my generation not running straight forward to these new technologies, and as a person who worked in technology for 46 years, I'm still afraid. You know, because I don't think we understand what it is that we're doing, right? Because we're moving so fast with these technologies that we're not taking time to understand the human implications, the societal implications. There are all kinds of pieces and parts there that are not really delved into to get enough detail to even let the public know, because what's going to happen is just like everything else. It's just going to be there.
Yeah.
And you're going to either have no choice and stay with your old self and your old ideas, or move forward. The people who stay with these old ideas, how long will they live? How long will they prolong life? So there are studies being done right now to extend the life of humans. You know, a lot of rich people are paying for these studies because, you know, you remember back, maybe this was in the 80s, I don't remember exactly, but a man died or had himself put into a... whatever that coma is, some kind of a, I can't think of what the word is right now, but he had himself put into this sleep. And he left everything to himself. he was coming back to get it, you know, so he was coming back to get it. So, you know, people want to extend their lives. The problem is just what I said, you know, so who then, so when you're connected to a USB, so let's just say you wake up. No, let's just say it's midnight and you're ready to go to sleep. You go plug yourself into your charger and you sleep for however long the charger lets you sleep. And it wakes you. What's to stop someone from saying, hey, we don't need Rochelle anymore. Let's disconnect her from her charger because we need to give this juice to someone else. We need to give this, you know. And so those are the kind of things that frighten me about this. But I don't want to get too far off track. We have some fun topics, and hopefully we'll get to it. We'll have a part two for this because I think this is a very important one.
Well, that talking about the chargers, that does remind me of, like, during the pandemic, oxygen was, like, on really short supply. And in some countries, there were places where they were, like, taking oxygen machines away from poor people and taking them to rich people, which is, I mean, more or less exactly what you're talking about that could happen with USB. And this was, you know, 3 years ago. It's happening, and, you know, on the news Like people are begging for these oxygen machines and just can't get them because there aren't enough. But maybe that's a good segue to our next device, which is the portable power device, portable power banks. That's another very cool little gadget. You know, we have a few of those here, which are just they're about the size. I would say they're like half the size of a brick. They have USB on them. Oh yeah, you got one right there. It's like a quarter size of a brick.
And it's an anchor, no less.
Nice.
Yes.
And like they're really nice. They you can carry them around. You charge the device itself up, and then once the device itself is charged, you can then transfer that charge to one or more cell phone devices, which I'm not a big camper, but when I do camp, I love having one of those with me because it means my cell phone will last like an extra day or so.
Absolutely. What about all these people and these airplane delays, right? So you're
Oh,
at the
yeah.
airport. I mean, like, you know, and I will say the airport has done a great job of putting chargers throughout the airport. They really have done a great job. We were just at RDU in West Palm Beach, and both of them had extensive technologies for almost everybody who wanted one could get one. You just
Yeah.
had to find a seat. If you didn't have a seat, you might be out of luck. But
Yeah.
they are making progress with these things. And I think that the smart mopeds have even gotten better because they will tell you when your device is charged versus, you know, leaving. Like, so typically now with the traditional mopeds or power banks, you plug your device into it and you just leave it there for some amount of time, you know, hoping it's fully charged, you know. So some of the power banks have gotten smart enough to say the device is fully charged. You may disconnect or put some message up like that.
Yeah.
I think that they are really great things, as you said, for travel, camping. You know, if you're going to be away from your home or a power source for a period of time, it's good to have them. And they make them small. They make them from the size of your finger to the size of your bed.
Exactly.
What you need for a brick. So they come in all sizes. And I will say one of the interesting things about a power bank, when you go buy one, you'll see some letters behind it, maybe AH or maybe some other letters, and those letters tell you about the strength of the power of the device, right? So it'll say something like 10,000 AH, or I think that's how it is, you know. So that's telling you the maximum throughput. So some devices can't handle, you know, these large, you know, power things. You know, if you plug something in that's a very small thing into a bigger, you know, you might short it, you know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to that. But, you know, I always say a power bank is a good thing to have. You need to have at least one. So when the power goes out in your house, you don't lose your connectivity to call the power company and say, hey, what's going on here?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I like sort of taking on if I know that I'm not going to be at like a desk for a day, like if I'm working remotely or working from, you know, some random place on campus, a lot of times when I'm trying to find some place to sit, the first thing I do is like, okay, where's a charger? Like where's somewhere that I can plug in because I don't know how long I'm going to have access to power. But like the days I have one of those little power supplies with me, it's not as big. Well, I don't have one for my laptop, but my phone isn't as big a deal. Although phones continue to get better and better, and I feel like now I don't really even have to worry about my phone charge that much as long as I
True.
charge it up every night.
Yeah, 14. The iPhone 14 did an amazing job with the battery. Now it has battery, and I, you know what I do is I automate. As soon as I get a new device, I plug it in and I leave it plugged in. And every day I plug it in. Where Everett, he plugs his Everett's like on 2% most times on his phone,
Oh.
his computer almost always. You know, so and his battery. We have the exact same phone. His battery has a battery life of 96%. Mine is like 72% because I plugged it in too much. And I would advise you, if you don't need to plug it in, don't plug it in.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I plug mine in whenever I get a chance as well. But like the problem is if you plug it in too much, and this goes into like I guess the chemistry of these lithium ion batteries, but if you're plugging it in too much, the max charge decreases. Like you're supposed to like Everett's probably doing like the most battery efficient thing by draining his to 2%. But if mine gets below, like honestly, if it gets down to 30%, I'm like, oh Lord, I need to plug it in.
I'm right there with you, Drew. Oh my God, I'm gonna lose. And it's amazing because more times than not, my phone and I are not in the same place. You know, I look at my phone first thing in the morning and last thing at night right before I go to bed. And so if someone has sent me a text or called me between them periods at times, I might miss it. And a lot of people say, oh, I've been texting you. How come? Okay. So, yes, I'm right there with you. Do I plug it in or I leave it plugged in?
Yeah, and it is weird because like I'm sometimes I feel like I'm plugged into my phone or I'm looking at my phone all the time, and then there are other times, and these are probably the better times where it's like, oh, I haven't looked at my phone in like 2 hours. This is sort of nice as well.
Exactly. So, absolutely. So, our next topic, we don't have a great deal of time, but I think we'll spend a little bit of time. I'd like to talk about the Rubik's Cube. Oh my God. This was one of my childhood young, essentially childhood young person favorite things to have was a Rubik's Cube. You're in your office, somebody's bothering you, you're on the phone, you can't, you're just moving with and trying to solve it. Guess what, Drew? It's now a digital Rubik's Cube.
That is amazing. I had not seen this before you sent me the link earlier either, and it looks really, really cool.
It does not. Because you
That
can cheat to solve it. You can find all kind of hits. You know, yours is connected to somebody else's. You know, it's
You could still do that with the with even a physical Rubik's Cube. I remember like taking the plastic pieces apart and reassembling them. You can take off the stickers, put the stickers back in a different order. You can get around that ton of ways.
Oh
can hack those hack the plastic probably easier than hacking these smart ones.
my God. I never thought about that, Drew. I guess it's young people's brain. I never thought about that. You just take the sticker and you can always win.
Oh well, and the sticker taking the stickers off was the hard way. If you just bend it the right way, you can pop all the plastic pieces apart and then make it a puzzle and just reconnect them that way. Or the easier thing for me and my brother was just to give it to my mom because she would always solve the Rubik's Cube. I don't know how she could do it, but she always solved. It seems impossible to me even now, but we would mix them up as much as we could, give it to mom. A few hours later or less, and be like, here you go. It's solved. It's like, well, that is amazing.
It's
I
almost
still
like
don't understand how people solve those.
I can solve it too, but I think the key is like same with TikTok though, is where you start in the middle. Most people start on the ends or somewhere, but if it's where you start in the middle helps you best go forward outward, you know. So those three in the middle most times are the ones that change or make the game what it is, you know. So if you really want to challenge yourself, mess up the top row and the bottom row and leave the one little square in the middle. And that'll take you days, if not weeks, if you're not an experienced Rubik's Cuber to figure it out. It was amazing. I gave Everett one. He had zero interest in it. Zero. It's still in his room. Every once in a while, he'll mess it up. Every once in a while, I go put the right answers, put it the way it should be. And he says, "Mom, you cheated, didn't you?" I'm like, "No, I just figured out." Nah. He's smarter than I am. He's absolutely smarter, but I guess his brain does not work. And it's not for everybody, right? So, you know, Rubik cubes were popular for a long time. They dominated the space, and you had Rubik cube competitions. You know, people would get together. It's amazing to see it as a digital tool now. And what is the purpose of making Rubik cube digital? What do we gain by that?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess you can gain the thing that I immediately think of is it's tracking all of the moves that you're making. So it can sort of, I'm assuming it can like analyze some common mistakes that you have. Like, because you have to think about, you know, when you're moving this thing around 3D space, you have to think about, you know, not just the colors you're lining up, but all of the pieces that you're gonna have to line up and then get that like final twist in to lock everything. And I guess it could be like even say like warmer, colder, do this, don't do that. Like if it's digital, it could give you like hints and like maybe blink boxes that should move. I feel like there's a lot that it could do. Although if you're an experienced Rubik Cube enthusiast, you may not need all of those smart things, or those may just get in your way.
Right. And not only that, when you think about it from the perspective of the manufacturer, think about AI, because the movements in Rubik's Cube says a lot about a person's intelligence, right? And I mean, that's no hit if you can't figure it out. It's not that you don't get the answers. That's not, but the fact that you might move this way versus that way, what? So think about what artificial intelligence could do with that, you know, with those moves and give it some predictive relationships, right? So, you know, the brain works this way, or this is left hand people, you know, whatever it is, but it can do that. And then I would ask you, Drew, how long before Legos goes digital? And I know there's an app Legos app, but I'm talking about the actual physical Legos.
So that's, you know, they've really been moving that way for like decades, as they had the, like, I remember when I was a teenager, I think I was a teenager when the Technic Legos came out, and they were like robotic style Legos, where instead of just bricks that you snap together, it would come with like a tiny little motor and some like moving pieces, so that, you know, if you built a car, you could have you could build like a powered car pretty much. It was a giant brick with a battery in it that had a tiny motor that would just like twist one axle, or, you know, have one wheel that twisted, and then you would build the Legos around it. And then for a while, it seemed like Lego was going to be more of a robotics company when robotics got really popular, because they had already done, you know, something very similar. And now I feel like they're back to normal bricks, although they do have tons of Lego video games and things like that. But I'm very curious about when it does go fully digital. I know there are apps where you can design your own Legos, like Lego characters, like in an app that you can just run on your desktop and then order the bricks, and it will print out a like full instruction manual on how to assemble the thing. Like all of that seems like very, very cool to me. And I always wish, you know, they have all these Lego games, but none of the games really seem to be building Lego stuff. It's all just Lego characters and Lego intellectual property. But it would be nice to have like a virtual thing, although I guess that's sort of what Minecraft is. Minecraft is sort of Legos in the virtual world.
Yeah, and like I said, I think that you could apply what's happened to Rubik Cube to everything. You know, every game that you play, Operations, you remember the game Operations?
Oh, yeah.
Or Monopoly, or whatever it is, eventually they will all go digital. I just think it's going to be interesting what that means. We were out this weekend, and I can't tell you the number of babies. And I'm not talking about 2 and 3 year olds. I'm talking about babies still in the stroller, in carry-ons, with an iPad. With an iPad. Think about what that might mean when we talk about these things like Rubik's Cubes and Legos and other things like that. These young people, like, they really are born digital. You know, they, from the moment they come out, they have some technology in their hands. I mean, some parents even give their children their old iPhones to play games on, you know. I mean, it's just amazing to see where that's going. And in the grand scheme of things, again, might be my age, but it's frightening. It's frightening to think, because think about this. So a 6 months old right now, with an iPad or on a smartphone or something, what are they going to be like when they get in school? You know, so that teacher stand up there teaching that old stuff.
Yeah.
That child is going to tune out, because either education needs to catch up digitally, or they need to find a new way to educate people. And it's not going to be this traditional way of having a teacher stand in front of a classroom and on a chalkboard or whiteboard.
Oh, yeah.
Write stuff. You're going to have to find another way to do this.
Yeah.
And so, all I can say is that as we go through these different iterations of technology, society has to start thinking about these things now. I mean, we don't want a COVID in some other area to hit us. We were not prepared for COVID. We didn't think about this. We didn't think about a worldwide, you know, virus or some kind of disease roaming through us. I mean, sure, they thought there were small pockets of communities that had diseases and had like smallpox or whatever it is. But think about this, when the whole world in front of you is changing technologically faster than you can almost breathe.
Yeah.
And where are the policies? Where are the thought leaders thinking about these things? Where are people trying to understand where these things are going? You know, and what does it mean for a population that is not? So you can imagine most of the babies we saw were white babies. There were a couple of black babies. But I mean, for the most part, there were affluent parents, parents who could afford to do this, or parents who knew to do this, not those that are not in this, that are not the ones who do not know or do not have access or do not understand, are the ones that are most at risk. And are we content with building a society where we have the haves and the have-nots technologically?
Yeah. No, that's a great point. And that it really hit hard in COVID, where, you know, all these kids suddenly have to start learning remote. And I mean, there's always stories about kids that like don't have internet at home, so they're having to go like study in the parking lot of Taco Bell and use their free Wi-Fi,
I'll
you
go to
know.
library.
Yeah. And, you know, compare that to the person who can just like, you know, do it in their kitchen at home with like, you know, a super nice new laptop. And, you know, the person in the more affluent family is going to have a much better experience and be more ready to succeed than somebody who's having to, you know, get a ride to the nearest Taco Bell or the nearest library.
Absolutely. And I think that that is the case for us as policymakers, right? Policymakers need to be really thinking about, you know, and this is a whole nother discussion, so I'll only make this one statement. It is an intentional act to have poor people. We are intentional. Think about all the money we have sent to Ukraine. We could have wiped out homelessness, probably wiped out poverty, probably wiped out hunger. And just the monies we've sent to our own, but we don't want to. And that's a sad statement. So, okay, Drew, let's stay on track. My next one I want to talk to you about is 3D devices. Drew,
Oh, yeah.
tell you when Duke put up that 3D printer in what was the name of the building? I can't think. It was in a library for a while, then it was
Oh,
somewhere else.
the tech TEC.
Yes. Oh my God, Drew, that was the best thing ever. And we can print what I printed myself for Apple. I have an app, you know, the Apple logo for, you know, I printed the law school's name. I mean, it was great. It was
Oh, yeah.
absolutely great. And now, Drew, it's not just printing for the sake of making objects, but like doing so much more. So, you know, they printed an artificial leg. Somebody
Oh,
needed
yeah.
a new what's the joint that goes from your knee to your foot? They printed one and they made it. Drew, where is this going?
So it's going, I mean, it's going crazy, honestly. It's really amazing. I was just in the I can't remember what tech stands for, Technology Entrepreneur Center or something. And they print so much stuff in there. So I mean, like there's what, probably 50 normal 3D printers, and then like a bunch of other more like high quality, you know, they've got things that can print or cut metal, things that can cut wood, like all this stuff. And I think a lot of the cool things they do are like printing replicas of people's organs as so that surgeons can get like a textural feel of how things feel. Like whenever they do a tour of that tech, they always show like, oh, and here's a, you know, a silicon heart that we printed up for a doctor who had to do like this very intricate surgery on, you know, let's say a baby. I don't remember if it was a baby heart or not. And you know, you can't just like practice that. You can't, there's not like an abundance of baby hearts going around that have this exact shape, but they were able to print one and then give the, you know, the surgeons something to practice with and, you know, get like an actual tactile feel on things. That's cool. The 3D printing of food, I think, is very cool, where like there's these little I've never actually had one, but apparently there are vending machines that will like 3D print you a pizza. And I use the term 3D print there very like loosely because it's really just squirting out ingredients. But it's, I mean, that's what 3D printers are as well, right? They're just these things that squirt out hot plastic
You can make
in a
jewelry
pattern.
with it. And there's nothing you cannot make. Eyeglasses, you know, you name it, the 3D printing, and I don't think it's fair to call it printing, but like you said, just squishing out stuff, you know, you put the instructions in. And think about that, AI and 3D devices. I mean, think about what that might mean, right? So any problem, any physical problem we encounter, a 3D printer might be able to generate it. The question is, it's like, how do you, so what is the pollution of a 3D printer? So there's been a lot of talk about being in a room when a 3D device is printing because of, you know, there's so much to think about when we think about technology, Drew, and I rely on you to know everything there is to know about technology. But what are your thoughts about, you know, what are the health concerns? What are the what does this mean for traditional things? Like, so, you know, typically if you had a broken femur or something like that, you know, they would either mend it back together or, you know, they would take a piece of bone from somewhere else. You know, I don't know if you remember if a number of years ago, it's been at least 20, there was people were stealing cadavers.
Oof.
But sort of like what you were saying about the oxygen thing, people were stealing cadavers to sell parts. you know, sell limbs and, you know, things like that. Where do you think this is going? Do you have any fear or concerns?
So, as far as the health and 3D printing, I think is an interesting thing because, like, growing up, one of the first things I learned going back to camping, don't camp a lot, but like, you don't throw plastic into a fire, right? Like, you don't want to inhale plastic. And that is what a 3D printer pretty much is throwing plastic onto a fire. You're heating this plastic up until it's a liquid and squirting it through this little tube in a specific pattern, and then it rehardens and like takes a shape. And at first, when the 3D printers were coming out, like a lot of people said, like you need to have, you know, a ventilation system going along with them, or you should be wearing a mask, or maybe you shouldn't do it inside at all. And all that sort of just seemed to go away. And now people are like, eh, it's probably fine, which seems sort of scary, but
It is scary
yeah. But
because
being able.
probably fine means that they don't know whether it's fine or not, and you are subjecting yourself to all the health risks that might come along with it. And like everything else, like food, like if you go to McDonald's and get a hamburger and you catch E. coli, it's hard to nail that to McDonald's.
Oh
So
yeah.
when you think about the e printing and that kind of thing, maybe if you're only in the room like once or twice a week, by the time it catches up to you, there's so many other things it could be. And that's what companies are counting on. You can't sue them for that because, you know, it could have been anything. You know, you could have been outside near the wrong tree or something. Anything they can take the weight off of that. But I just want, you know, us to just raise the issue minimally.
Yes, absolutely. And I was reading a story yesterday about a guy that got, have you heard of this popcorn lung?
Yes.
So apparently, so the story I read, I didn't know the history on popcorn lung, but apparently this guy, he would make two batches of microwave popcorn a day, and he would like inhale the steam coming off of the popcorn. And that was enough to give him this condition where it sounds like a perm it almost sounds like a permanent asthma attack. And they named it popcorn lung because the people that were working in the factory making these bags of popcorn were inhaling whatever these chemicals are all day, and it was wrecking their lungs. And it's like, oh yeah, that's awful as well. That's your employer is pretty much, you know, killing you or severely injuring you.
And the downside of these things, I mean, while we welcome new technology as they come online, the downside of these things is like at the end of the day, you're going to have so many health issues with nowhere to know where to go, right? So you look at TV, you see there's a lawsuit for the water in Fort Bragg. You know, there's all these lawsuits for various things. If you use talcum powder from somebody, you know, all. But these are after the fact. Most of these people might be dead or severely injured, you know. And in a society where so many of these things are coming together, right? So, like the air in your home, you know, and they make digital air filtration systems as well to clean the air in your house. But still, you don't know what else they're giving you, right? So it's like the good and the bad. You know, if you eat fried chicken every day for the rest of your life, you're going to have heart disease. It's almost guaranteed, especially if you're frying chicken the traditional way. Now, if you're doing it doing 3D, it might be a whole different matter. But if you do it the traditional way, it's, you know, so there's, you know, cause and effect, right? So you get the benefit of the cause and you have to deal with the effect. And so digital printing, you know, I think it's amazing. You know, I can't wait so I can afford to buy a 3D printer because I plan to make a whole bunch of stuff, but I'm gonna make it in my garage. So I
Yes.
don't go and let the fumes go out the garage.
Yes.
But a digital printer, the cheapest digital printer, 3D printer that's worth anything is about $5,000. I mean, so you know, do you have $5,000 laying around? Then you need your material. So let's just say you're gonna make birdhouses. You know, you have to pay for the materials that the 3D printer can use. So it is not like you can go get some wood out your yard and say, oh, yeah, we're going to use this. No, that's not how it works. You know, you've got to have the specific materials because, as Drew said, you start out with something soft that eventually becomes hard. So even if you're doing wood, that wood has to be in some sort of form that the 3D printer can push it out to the form you want. So it's not like you can go out there and get some sticks or, you know, shrubs
Not
and
yet
stuff.
anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe sometime soon.
We can hope.
I saw a really good demo. This was at the tech as well, where they were, I don't think this product ever came to market, but it was a printer that used plain white paper as a material. So it looked like a printer. So you would put a ream of paper on one end, the paper would go through it and stack out the other end. And then this was the craziest thing I've ever seen, Rochelle. They like rustled the paper and a hammer fell out of it.
God.
It was amazing. And it was a little bit more than rustling, but what that printer was actually doing is as it was running the vanilla like paper through, it was making tiny little incisions in the shape of a hammer, and I guess also like shoving in some style of like paper glue. And when it went through, after it all dried, what you had was pretty much like a carving of a hammer that's glued together just from a bunch of pieces of paper. And once the pieces of paper fall apart, you got like a solid hammer. Like I wouldn't want to build a house with that hammer, but it felt solid. Like it felt like, a real hammer. It's probably stronger than the hammers that I have here in my house.
Is it a common, is it a wood and metal hammer, or is it just a wood hand
It
hammer?
was all paper. It was 100% paper. So it was like paper and glue that they somehow, I mean, I guess they cut it, heated it, and glued it to a consistency that was like, felt like a hammer.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. It was the craziest thing I'd ever seen. When they're like, so see this paper, zzz, run it through, see it again. And they just sort of shook it up. And then it was like, and here's a hammer. It looked like a magic trick.
That's impressive as all get out. So, Drew, I know we're at time, but I would like to say, like there are more gadgets out there than you could shake a stick at, And while Drew says gadgets are fun, I would say, that little criteria says adult supervision required. You need to know what you're doing. Don't just jump on these technologies because they're good. Like you, everybody should have a char, a power bank, a charger, a mopey, whatever you want to call it. You should have one. The harm to it is very, very little. Long as you keep track of it, it's very little. But there are other pieces and parts that are these gadgets that are not so innocent. They're not so friendly. So we have to find some way to think about these things in terms of policy. We have to be able to write some reasonable policy that helps us understand how to apply these devices to our home and to our for our use, but also understand what the risks are. Drew, I expect you to write a bulletin about that immediately.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening today. This was a very fun one, so I'm glad that we got to do it. I'm sure we'll have a part two to this because we got lots of more gadgets to talk about. But please send us any feedback you all have to imminentteachnology@gmail.com, and we will see you all next week.